Okay, I'd like Green Man to know that I do have my own water bottle. And so you can use this as much as you'd like this time. Don't touch my water bottle. Okay, handouts. There's a new handout for this morning. Okay, while those handouts are happening, see, you probably thought that you were done with my difficult exercises. There are four more, and they start after lunch today. The second one is this around sunset. Third one is late this evening, and the fourth is tomorrow morning before breakfast. Don't go home without having done these. No, you're not free of these. There's more. Okay, so while these are being handed out, I'd like to start with a big overview and then focus in on what I'd like to guide us through today, this morning, and after lunch, and at sunset, and late this evening, and tomorrow morning. So, yesterday and today, I'm going through with you a nature-based map of the human psyche, a four cardinal direction map or model of what human wholeness might look like. And yesterday we looked at these four facets or dimensions of the self, capital S, self, the human self. It's like our toolbox, our four sets of resources that pull us towards maturity and individuation. And you might ask, well, what good is it? So I'll just remind you, as Carl Jung famously said, the goal of individuation is not perfection, but wholeness. That we embrace all our capacities, human capacities. And this is a map of what wholeness might look like. So if you found any of the four directions of the self yesterday challenging, confusing, or difficult, or unclear, it certainly wasn't the speaker. Those were one or two dimensions of the self that, presumably, that you have not embraced as much as you might have. And if you're a normal resident of Western civilization, the West is the most likely one to have been a little confusing. Because that's the West is the portal to the depth and the darkness, which in Western civilization we're told you're not to go there. It's really only for people who are particularly bad and get sent there. And the nature-based people in all cultures around the world say the dark, which doesn't mean evil, it means dark, not light. The dark and the depth is the place you go to become an adult. Well, isn't that interesting? The place Western religions say don't ever go is the place you need to grow up. I wonder if that's a coincidence. If we surrender to Earth's intelligence, we could rise up, rooted like trees.
I was wondering if you could say a little bit about the wanderer. Why is the wanderer located in the way on the west side? I don't understand.
Yeah, the question is, why is the wanderer in the west? Wanderer. W-A-N-D, you'll see it on your on the interpersonal side of your map. The wanderer, soul guide, magician, psychopomp. Oh boy, there's a 2-hour talk right there. That's what my book Soulcraft is about. But here's a 1 minute or less answer. Uh, In our society, we tend to be conformists or rebels. And many of us are both. We conform over here, rebel over here. If we're part of a rebellious group like the Quakers, for example, we conform to other Quakers. But we're rebels relative to countercultural rebels as Quakers. At some point in life, we have to go beyond both conforming and rebelling. And the archetype that makes most sense to me is the wanderer. The rebel, now let's start with the conformist. The conformist says in his behavior in life, I don't really know who I am. And deep down inside, I don't know who I am. But I notice these certain kinds of people are getting all the goodies and the rewards. I'll be like them. The rebel says, you know, deep down inside, I don't know really who I am. But I'm really pissed off at these guys over here. I'll be anything but them. I'll be the opposite of them. The wanderer says, I don't really know, deep down inside, I don't really know who I am. But I am going to stride deeper into the world and find out. How'd I do? That answer your question? Why is it the West? The West is the place of the unknown, of the dark, of the mystery, of the hidden treasure. If I'm a wanderer, if I'm going to find out who I really am in my depths, then I'm going to wander into the world. Mary Oliver striding deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Sounds selfish at first. It is not selfish because the only life you can save is your soul life. That's the only life worth saving. Your real life, your authentic life. And whenever we find our authentic life, we find there the gift that is ours to bring to the world. Is that selfish? My favorite answer is yes, that's selfish. Is it altruistic? Yes. It's actually something bigger than both selfish and altruistic. Kant called it beautiful. That was his name for it. Okay, so that was more than a minute. So the big picture is wholeness. What good is wholeness? Well, you know, cross-culturally, in all cultures I know of, it maybe not be all of them, but it's very common. It's said to be there's three worlds. There's the upper world, the middle world, and the lower world, or the underworld. And I like to think of these as three realms of identity, of human identity. They're not different places. Just like the world of baseball is not a special place. It's the world of finance is not a special place. These three worlds are realms of identity. And the middle world is what our society tends to be focused upon. And middle world kinds of people would say the middle world is all there is. The middle world is village life, raising children, teaching them, building buildings, keeping the plumbing working, making friends' conferences happen, doing the checkbook, gardening, growing food, shopping. You know, what most people would say, life, that's the middle world. It's only one of three worlds in terms of our identity. It's the personality level. Who am I? Who's my social role, identity? I'm a parent, a student, a speaker at the friends conference. And the upper world is our identity in relationship to the one, to the divine, to light. It's in Eastern traditions, it would be called the non-dual. You can't really say what it is. It's just not dual. Or you can say it's the one. It's my identity, my consciousness being one with, not separate from, the consciousness that is the one spirit that moves through everything, sometimes called God or Allah or the Tao, etc., etc. And on some level, I recognize that I am that one, and everyone else is. Namaste. I salute the one in you. And for upper world-oriented people, that's what the world's about, and everything else is just details. How many upper world people are here? It's not, you don't have to be embarrassed about it. It's just a third of people ought to be upper world people. But to become balanced, we have to say yes, us upper world people have to say yes to the middle world and the underworld. Okay, so I lied in that last sentence. I'm not really an upper world person. I'm more of an underworld person. And the underworld is our identity at our core, not at our personality. It's what is most unique about us. It's what the gift we were born to bring to the world. And for a lot of, for underworld people, that's what life is about. The personality stuff is just, you know, unfortunate details. You have to be in the world with a personality. Too bad. And the upper world is an interesting place maybe to visit someday. But the underworld is what it's about. Those unique mysteries at my core. So the underworld and the upper world are what we call the spiritual. Okay, it's what I call the spiritual. The underworld and the upper world together, those are the mysteries, or the mystery, capital M, is what I am at my core, way down in low strata, lower than the personality. And the upper world is my identity with the One. They're both mysteries. Spiritual has both two halves. And in the world today, the spiritual is, tends to be, for one tradition, just the upper or just the lower. But I believe it's meant to be both. So, wholeness. There's these four dimensions of wholeness I'm proposing. And the implication is that if we're going to have a full fulfilling, a full and fulfilling middle world life, we need all four of these domains. We need access to them, and we need to be able to embody that west, dark, mysterious change place of depth. And we need to embody the competent, knowledgeable, nurturing north in whatever we do, in socially or in our work. And we need this east part to help us not get so attached to things and help us lighten up and not take ourselves so seriously. It's very important in the middle world. And the south, our full embodied emotionality, sensuality, eroticism, can't do anything in the middle world fully without that too. Upper world, same thing. You need all four to really come into a full experience and embodiment of our upper world identities. And same thing with the underworld. So what good is it? The answer is, how could you do anything without it, all four? And we tend, in the individuation process when we're younger, we tend to do upper world, middle world, and or underworld things only partially, because we don't have all four of our dimensions of wholeness accessed. And there's many people in our dysfunctional society walking around who have access to none of those four. None of them. Quite common. None. Zero. Not one of them. And we tend, especially in a dysfunctional society, tend to get stuck in the inner circle on your handout. What's my handout? You have a copy. And that's what today's topic is, the inner circle. And I call these the sub-personalities, because one of my early psychological areas of study was psychosynthesis, developed by Roberto Saggioli, the Italian psychiatrist, one of the first spiritual-oriented psychologies. Tends to be kind of upper world, so I've moved on from there. But nevertheless, they call these parts of our psyches sub-personalities, so I still use that term. Gestaltists call them parts. Jungians tend to call them complexes. And I can't think of other examples right now, but you find them in most all psychologies. So the proposal here is that there's four groupings of subpersonalities that fit on the four directions, four cardinal directions. And they're wounded or fragmented versions of the corresponding dimension of a self that's in the same direction. Everybody get that? There'll be a quiz later. That's an important point. Better say again, because there will be a quiz, and quizzes should be announced. So, Yes. The sub-personalities, which are the inner dimension, on the intrapersonal side, you get the loyal soldier at the top, etc., that inner circle. These are wounded or fragmented varieties of the same, of the dimension of the self that's on the outer circle of that same direction. So the loyal soldier is, you might say, an immature version of the nurturing parent. That's one of four examples, or if you use both sides of your handout, it's one of eight examples. Are you with me? And here's where we're going. Here's where I'm going. I hope you come with me. And that is the opportunity in individuation. One of the opportunities is to be in relationship with our wounded parts from the place of the self, capital S. Get that? A major goal of individuation is to learn to be in relationship to our sub-personalities from the consciousness and with the resources of the self. What's that? That latter stuff? That's what you did yesterday. That's what we did yesterday, and you experientially embraced that with whatever exercises you did. Now remember, the self is one thing that has four dimensions. And so when we're in relationship to our own sub-personalities from the self is really just one thing. And notice how well the map works out in that the self is on the outer circle. It's kind of like it's embracing the inner circle, which are the sub-personalities. So you all know the term acting out. When a person is acting out, they are stuck in one or more sub-personalities and acting it out, probably unconsciously. Or maybe consciously, but they're just stuck there. And if they go to therapy, if it's good therapy, the therapist will help them get unstuck, and the therapist will be using their self to do that. And if they're a really good therapist, they'll be teaching or coaching their client to access the resources of their own self, client's self, so that the client can learn to be in relationship to their own sub-personalities from the self. And that's what I'd like to lead you through today, is going through the four sub-personalities, the four groupings, and taking a look through some description and some poems about what's it like to be in a relationship with that kind of sub-personality from the self. Okay, any questions about what we're doing? About what I just said?
Would you put some words around being in relationship with
Yeah, the question was, what does being in relationship to the sub-personalities from the self look like? And that's exactly what we're going to do this morning.
How does the therapist help himself not to get stuck into the client's stuckness?
The question is, how does the therapist not get stuck in the client's stuckness? And that is by approaching herself, the therapist, and the client, both from the self. And details are coming up. Before 11, I hope. Yeah.
So is the relationship between the inner circle and the outer circle kind of a gradation? In other words, if you're an addict, you're not a serious
These aren't personality typologies, so those are, there's a related map that we're not working with this weekend. Everybody has all four sets of sub-personalities. And if you get stuck in any one of those four inner places, you're by definition not being conscious of or acting from the self, which is all four of those outer. Before I forget, let me say that we never get rid of the sub-personalities. That's a premise here. I don't know if it's true, but it is my premise. We never get rid of them. Enlightened beings don't get rid of them. They're always there. The goal is not to get rid of or permanently retire any sub-personality, but rather learn how to be in relationship to them from the self when those subpersonalities show up.
Just to clarify that these subpersonalities can be both genetic and trauma. Etiology can be trauma and can be cumulative.
Was that early word genetic? Is that okay? Could you ask again?
These subpersonalities can be both genetic and or a result of early trauma, middle trauma, or late trauma.
Yes. Nature and nurture. I'd prefer karmic myself over genetic, not being a reductionist at all. But yeah, you could say they can be either. And James Hillman, many of you know, would say, well, wait a minute, there's a third category. There's nature, there's nurture, and there's the soul. And he says that's something different. But let's not go there, because then we'll never get through this morning. So yes, the trauma can come from any of those places. The soul has trauma in mind. That's the realm of the sacred wound. Not on the agenda this weekend. Too bad. Maybe we'll get to it a little bit today. But the idea is that everybody is wounded. It's necessary to be wounded in order to be human. Because without that wound, the ego forms so rigidly that we can't break into it. There's no hole for the light to get in or the dark to get out. I probably did. What sentence was it? Yeah, without being wounded, the personality needs to be wounded in order for it to break down at some point, in order to inherit a larger story, a greater story. And when we do, and we get to that greater story through our core wound in life. And consciously go into our core wound, we never find the larger story, the soul story that we're here to embody in life. But until we've healed enough early in our life, we won't be strong enough as a personality or an ego to go into that wound. So psychotherapy is especially a discipline, ought to be, for younger people, younger in the sense of individuation, not in the sense of age necessarily. To help people develop a personality strong enough to withstand the descent into the underworld, which goes through the wound. And some people say, this is a terribly polemical thing to say, that psychiatry is a modern discipline to keep people from ever going into the underworld using medication. Now, that doesn't refer to progressive psychiatrists, of course. Or Jungian psychiatrists. Okay, so there's the big picture, and we really need to move right along. So, because each one of these topics is just massive, it's at least a 4-day program. So this is going to be just to pique your interest, I hope, and just a very brief introduction. But a lot of you, especially therapists, know about some of these four things anyways. So we're going to start today. I'd like to start with the South, which is the wounded children. Notice the inner circle, the subpersonalities, are all plural. And the outer ones are singular, because the self is singular. And the inner ones, we don't have just one wounded child, or just one inner child. We have all a bunch of inner children with different issues and agendas. So that's why they're all plural. Okay, you almost don't have to say anything anymore about inner children. Everybody knows what they are now. Right? Those parts of us that are... one way to think of them is if you look on the interpersonal map, this is the way they look in us to others. When we're being these four different kinds of orphans, I call them orphans, these wounded children, orphans, homeless. There's the victim. You all know about the victim, transactional analysis, et cetera, et cetera. The conformist and the rebel I just spoke about. And the prince and princess. And these are the parts of us that are wounded and are specialized either in fear or anger, or both. Yep, I'll say a little bit about all four. The victim specializes in fear. And it's something like, you know, really bad things were done to me when I was a kid, and also last week and this morning at breakfast. And I don't want it to happen again, and maybe someone would come along, please, and rescue me. And the rescuers, of course, are the North subpersonality. That's one version of the North. And the conformist says, fear again. I'm afraid that I'll be wounded again like I was as a kid or last week. And maybe if I play the game like the people who are getting all the rewards and don't get shot at by others, then I'll be safe. So I'll just be a conformist. The rebel is one of the two angry ones. The rebel says, I am really pissed about how I was hurt when I was a kid and also this morning at breakfast. And I'm going to get even with those SOBs. And the princess says, or the prince, says, I'm really angry, and so it's a good thing that I was born upper middle or upper class. And I'm going to get back at the world by having lots of slaves and servants and telling my husband or my wife what to do or kicking the dog and... I'm sure that's not familiar to anyone, but... Okay, so did that answer that question? Okay, so these are the inner children, and the goal is to embrace them from the self. And a good therapist who's working with a client that has almost no relationship to their self will first do that embracing themselves. Sometimes it's called reparenting. And if when the client is ready to learn these things themselves, the therapist will help them develop their all four dimensions of their self. It's one thing that Richard Schwartz does in internal family systems. He evokes the self. Even in clients that you swear couldn't possibly have any access to them, to the self, he believes, and I think he's right, that we all do. And with the right strategies, we can evoke that. Okay, so here's a few poems. And from these are poems from the self, I believe. And you might want to ask yourself while you're listening to them, is this coming from the North, the nurturing parent? Is it coming from the innocent, wise East? Is this coming from the wild self? Is it coming from the anima or animus? And ideally, you couldn't make the distinction anyways. If it's from the self, it's from all four. But some have of these poems have a shade more of one than the other. And these are all short. So see how short this one is. So. Pay attention. Okay, this is from Rilke. These are all the self being in relationship to the wounded children. Rilke. You mustn't be frightened if a sadness rises in front of you. You mustn't be frightened if a sadness rises in front of you, larger than any you have ever seen. If an anxiety like light and cloud shadows moves over your hands and everything you do, you must realize that something is happening to you, that life has not forgotten you, that it holds you in his hand and will not let you fall. I don't know about you, but I'd love to hear that from myself when I get gripped, you know, every 10 years or so. Haha. Every... three times a day at least, you know, by some wounded child emotion thing. You mustn't be frightened if a sadness rises in front of you, larger than any you've ever seen. If an anxiety like light and cloud shadows moves over your hands in everything you do, you must realize that something is happening to you, that life has not forgotten you, that it holds you in His hand and will not let you fall. Okay? Rinka. I don't have that one here, so I'd be guessing. I don't even know which book it's from. Rilke didn't name many of his poems, and that's one he didn't. Okay, here is Jalaluddin Rumi, a friend.
Is there a way, maybe for tomorrow's handout, we could get copies of these poems?
Talk to Dirk about copies. This is Rumi. You might ask again, what if there's one facet of the self that this is most coming from, you might ask what it is, just for fun, just to do some multitasking here, keep you awake. Sorrow prepares you for joy, Rumi says. Sorrow prepares you for joy. It violently sweeps everything out of your house so that new joy can find space to enter. It shakes the yellow leaves from the bough of your heart so that fresh green leaves can grow in their place. It pulls up the rotten roots so that new roots hidden beneath have room to grow. Whatever sorrow shakes from your heart, far better things will take their place. Something in the last 10 or 20, 30 years, we really seem to be rediscovering that in our society, that grief is an essential doorway to so many things. And that we live in a culture that has put the lid on our grief for so many generations. Martine Prechtel says that whatever grief our ancestors, our parents, grandparents, etc., did not embrace, we have to do it for them. And he said, Western people are sitting on a Mount Everest of grief because of that. Sorrow prepares you for joy. It violently sweeps everything out of your house so that new joy can find space to enter. It shakes the yellow leaves from the bough of your heart so that fresh green leaves can grow in their place. It pulls up the rotten roots so that new roots hidden beneath have room to grow. Whatever sorrow shakes from your heart, far better things will take their place. Okay, just one more. This one I love. This is from Persia Gertler. Persia Gertler. G-E-R-T-L-E-R. Can't tell you much about her. Contemporary. This is called the healing time. Remember, we're approaching the wounded children from the self. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. Finally. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again. Where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. Hard to believe someone would do that, huh? But that's what the self says. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life, all the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. Okay, and the Jungians, you better be getting that, because if you're not, you're not really a Jungian. You need to know that there's something sacred in those wounds, and that our individuation so often comes through the doorway of going into the very core of those wounds. There's something holy there. Okay, after lunch, I hope you'll do the first exercise on today's handout. It's called a wound walk. A wound walk. And you don't really have to look at it now, but you just might want to make sure you can see it on the page so that when your loyal soldier says, well, I didn't do it because I couldn't find it, and this is, you know, quite adequately described here in several steps. You might want to read the whole thing before you go out to do it, so your loyal soldier can't say, well, you didn't read the whole thing first. And this can be, this has been a very profound exercise for quite a number of people over the years. So it's a nature-based approach to our wounds from the place of the self. Okay, instead of dyads on this, I'd like to do something a little briefer. Hopefully it'll be fun. It works with, I haven't done it with a group quite this large, but I'd just like you to settle into your seat, and this is a voice dialogue, and settle into your... You know, be aware of, I should say, be aware of any of your wounded children, especially those that are active this morning. If you can't find any, it's called denial. So just be aware, what are those emotions in there, those orphans inside that are, you know... Maybe they don't quite think the conference is being designed right. Or there shouldn't be an open enrollment policy. People should be screened because there's those certain people here that shouldn't have been here. And besides the, you know, and also the speaker isn't quite doing it right. And sometimes I wonder about his sense of humor. The mattresses are obviously too stiff or too soft. Not wide enough.
Otherwise, I'd have a good dream.
And it's about the worst food I've had since college. And how come we didn't get the other facilities here that we normally get?
I dream.
Just wait to see if we come back here to Lebanon Valley College. Okay, I hope I've evoked some. And I'm doing this for you so you don't have to do it yourself, because I want to, with voice dialogue, invite you into speaking to your own inner children, your wounded children, from the place of the self. And I want to just to invite you to just speak it out into the room when you hear yourself responding to your own wounded children. And if two or three people speak at the same time, that's okay too.
Why is my voice never heard?
Did everyone hear that?
No.
She said, why is my voice never heard?
What? Why
did the boys get to drive the tractor and I have to stay home and make a lemonade? Okay, now that's the... See, both of these are inner children. Okay, I'm inviting you to speak out loud from the self to your wounded child.
I love you and I forgive you.
You don't have to work so hard.
You don't have to work so hard.
You have nothing to forgive.
You have nothing to... There's nothing to forgive.
You don't have to speak so softly.
Everybody hear that?
You don't have to speak so softly.
You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles across the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Okay, who else? That was Mary Oliver.
You have to explain to no one why you spent the night with that guy.
You really don't have to explain it, but can you tell us who it was?
Yes, Daddy.
Just curious.
Is that important to you?
Wake up to now.
You don't have to get up and turn around.
That sounded like an inner child. Yeah. Which is, it's good you're hearing that, but how would yourself respond to her?
You can't get up and run.
Good try, buddy.
Good try, buddy-o.
Meet the guests at the door laughing.
Meet the guests at the door laughing.
You're just as good as your brothers.
Just as good as your brothers. Maybe on Thursdays better.
Why am I here?
Why am I here? Was that a wounded child or the self speaking to the wounded child?
I think it's the wounded child speaking to me.
And you respond to him?
Joy, always joy.
It's
perfection is wasted energy.
What is?
Perfection is wasted energy.
It's overrated.
There's no one way to look for that.
Love yourself. It's okay to
be beautiful. It's okay to feel that feeling, including that shame sometimes, when if you're feeling it. It's okay. We're going to sit here and we're going to really feel it fully and learn some things from it.
Lighten up.
Okay, that was from the East dimension of the self.
Be imperfect in paradise.
You are allowed to be angry.
You are allowed to be angry.
Everyone is interested in what you have to say.
This problem is her limitation.
We can play together.
Why should you be scandalized when the world is simply being the way it is?
All right. Thank you. You got it. Clearly. Sorry?
I like that exercise.
The voice dialogue. Yeah.